This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
In studio with us today, we have Rutherford County Commissioner Craig Harris. Craig, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good, Scott.
So what all is happening right now within the county that maybe folks don't know about or is coming up soon?
Well, you know, it's kind of at the end of the year and holidays are coming up, so we haven't had a whole lot on the agenda, but some of the things, you know, we're dealing with is things what we always dealt with is, you know, our growth and traffic, and we have budgets coming up soon. You know, I know it sounds like we just had it, but it always keeps going.
You know, I always imagine being in politics, I just imagined getting, if I were in it, I'd get phone calls all the time, text messages, emails, people complaining or pushing for or asking for. Is that the case? Does that happen 24/7?
No, you know, some of the rural commissioners get a lot of calls. I'm in the city, so a lot of my calls, you know, are aimed at the city. So, yeah, some of the commissioners, Pettus Reed and Robert P., I mean, they get some, and I hear, you know, Commissioner Piercy gets a few calls. So people, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we represent 16,500 people in each district. So that's what your job is. And your job is to respond to your constituents and help them and answer their questions.
A study by UT just a few years back, I think it was the UT Boyd Research Center that released this study. And it talked about how, I think in year 2041, we're going to have around 700,000 residents in Rutherford County.
Yeah, we had a GNRC came out, I think it was a couple years ago. And yeah, we're going to be very large.
That's crazy. I mean, that's almost a million people in 20 year, or less than 20 years.
When we had a school facilities tax that just passed, and I was for that, and I helped negotiate that. But one of the things that happened was they put a growth rate on there. So you had to grow 10% every 10 years, which is about 2%. You know, some people say, well, what if we don't? I don't see it not happening. I mean, I just can't see Rutherford County not growing 2% every year. And based on all the studies that I have seen, we're going to double.
When you look at the county commission, when you look at issues within the county and within the city, there's several issues that keep coming up, and those issues deal with everything from transportation to trash in the landfill, and then the one we've heard at least the last 5 or 6 years, a forensic center.
Yeah, and Pettus Reed, and I know the mayor has brought this up, but Pettus Reed has been championing this for going on 4 to 5 years, so it's nothing new. The way I feel about a forensic center is, you know, I feel there is a need, but I also feel that that money that the mayor is wanting to allocate towards it needs to go towards something else.
How much are we talking here?
I believe he said $15 million. So
would that come out of the county's pocket, or would that be funded through the state? How would that be funded?
No, that would be coming out of the county in funded balance. I believe that's how he's doing it. So I'm against that, and I'll tell you why, is because we need to take care of our first responders and our sheriff's department. Their salaries are not in line against surrounding counties or even the city. And that money would give them a raise 10 to 12% that would make us competitive, so we quit losing people. We're losing good people. I think we lost 3 very highly qualified people because we can't afford for them to stay here, because our salary is just not competitive.
When you look at the fire department as an example, because that's a new department, I mean, relatively new. It hadn't been here for years on end. We've had volunteer fire departments years before, and then we got our own fire department, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
So with that department alone, I think the last pay raise, was it 2% or something?
This year?
Was it this year?
I believe it was 5.
5%, okay. Yeah. Does that bring them up to the same level as an example, the city of Murfreesboro or Smyrna Fire?
No, it does not. And we're doing a salary study. We're in the process of that right now so that we know exactly where we stand. But no, fire department, the city of Murfreesboro and the surrounding counties pay more for what we do. And Scott, why would we do the same job and make $12,000 less a year?
That's a big difference.
It's a huge difference. And that's why I think that spending on transfer stations and spending on forensic centers is totally unnecessary. And we should use that money to try to get our first responders up to a decent amount.
While we're paying less, we're also in the process of giving more more duties to the firemen each and every day, it seems like. Because you know this for a fact. Over the years, we've seen the duties of firemen grow from just responding to fires, period, to now responding to accidents, to now providing certain levels of medical care. I mean, it is a job that is growing as far as the duties that one fireman actually performs.
Well, our EMS ambulance, they have so many calls in a day. And it's unbelievable how many they call. And we're a big county, Scott. We're not what we was 30 years ago, you know. And, you know, I think you just said we, you know, had volunteer fire department. We are 350,000 population, and you can imagine how much and how big the county is and how much the fire department and, you know, the ambulance service, it does all the county.
Yeah.
That's one of the things on the forensic center is that there is an ambulance building that is part of that building. Now, I'm for building that. Matter of fact, I mean, I'm going to push hard to build that. And I know Commissioner Beverly is really pushing that as well. But we have got to take public safety has got to be first. And Commissioner Pettus Reed, who is our chairman of public safety, he is focused on that, and me and him are in line on that.
When you look at the sheriff's office, they're responding to calls everywhere from the Kittrell community. Then the next hour, they get a call all the way out in Eagleville. They're literally driving, you know, 620 square miles, and they're driving it. Well, they got to make pretty good pace in order to get to certain calls.
I mean, Scott, we have one car doing just an unbelievable square mile.
Yeah.
One. So, and we have so many openings, you know, especially in the jail, 911 calls, you know, booking. It's unbelievable how many openings we have. And that's because we're not competitive in our pay.
Now, one of the arguments that the mayor has brought up regarding a forensic center is that it is needed more so than us sending, you know, bodies to Nashville, because it's needed by the sheriff's office for investigations.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, I'm not against a forensic center. I just don't feel that it's time for one. Yeah, so I think, you know, the mayor said somewhere around $500,000 for autopsies. I think it's more like $360,000. But the problem, too, also with a forensic center is in Nashville, it's probably owned.
Mm-hmm.
If that situation happens where it closes down or something, yeah, we would be in trouble. But it's not a gigantic major concern in Williamson County or any of the other counties. So I don't necessarily see the urgency of it. I see the necessity of it. But right now, we need to take care of our first responders and try to get this county, you know, as safely as we can by having good quality officers and first responders.
And if this forensic center would cost Rutherford County $15 million, is that the first year just building it?
Yes.
We have that money, though. And you're proposing we use that towards pay raises for first responders.
Absolutely. And I don't see anybody that really that has paid attention over the last year and, you know, listen to our sheriff. You know, Mike Fitzhugh is a very good leader, and me and him had conversations, and we had to take care of Scott. And, you know, that $15 million could go a long ways. That could get us back in line with other cities and other counties.
If we had these pay raises approved by the full county commission, how soon would that happen? And what kind of pay raise are we talking for the sheriff's office and for the fire department? And then for, let's say, ambulances? I mean, how would we divide this money up, and how many years would it be in existence?
Well, it's kind of like in, I think, 2019, 2020, I'm not real sure. We had to do a 20% raise to get our first responders just to median point. Well, now that's bypassed us again. So I feel like we probably need to be around 12.5% increase. And, you know, that would probably go in effect in the budget of 25. That's something that we really got to work on. How long will it last, Scott? You know, I can't really tell you, you know, because we're at the discretion of other people raising their prices and keeping their people. So, you know, as soon as we did 20% and raised these guys to a median price, then other counties and city went up 10-15%, and we couldn't, here we are right back where we was. Hey, there's just so much we can afford too. And that's why I'm saying, let's allocate that money towards this problem that we have, you know. And there is a time, and there will be a time for a forensic center, but I remember having a conversation with the mayor a year ago, and I told him, I said, you know, are you going to build this without state money? And he said, absolutely not. There is no state money right now. And in my conversations with our delegation, you know, they're not seeing it.
With this 12.5% proposed pay raise for first responders, would this be like a systematic thing set into motion to where next year it'd be another 12.5, or would it then the year following it'd be 2%, 5%, 6%? What would happen?
No, this would be a one-time thing. And then, of course, we would have our CPI raises. We would have cost of living raises, which could be 2 to 5%. Depends on, you know, how our budget is and how strong it is. But I think it's a priority of mine. Two of the things that I really want to do in my last terms is I want to raise revenues, create revenues, find revenues for this county so that we don't have to get into property taxes. And that's hard to do, but we've had such a disconnect with our delegation. And I'm really working hard trying to get our delegation and all of us back together, talk, and the impact fee that the mayor tried to get through and the school facilities tax. I mean, there was some hard feelings. There was some you know, discussion, and we got to get everybody back together. And I think if we can do that, we can raise revenues. A lot of these problems we can address, like a forensic center and first responder pay and beautification of Rutherford County. And if we're going to have growth, like if we have growth, for instance, bringing in companies, I'll just say that.
Yeah.
We need to bring in companies that are white collar jobs, who can afford our houses, buy our houses, and help us with property taxes. And that's what I want to see also.
And these companies are going to want good security, good fire response. They want better safety, I'm sure, in whatever city they locate in. So it makes sense to go ahead and move forward with a pay raise for first responders. It makes absolute sense because, like you're saying, we're not going to be able to keep the first responders we have. We're just going to spend money to train them and then watch them walk away.
Yeah, I mean, that's happening now. We lost three very good employees at the Sheriff's Department, been here years. I think that they love Rutherford County. I think they want to stay in Rutherford County. But, man, Scott, it's hard to turn down a job and make $12,000 to $20,000 more a year. You know, and that's big. And then we have some, you know, some entry jobs that are not, you know, just not competitive.
And when you look at the cost just to make it through the day these days, things are so much more expensive than they used to be. The cost of a house, especially true, it makes sense that these folks do need more salary.
Yeah, and you know, our house prices, you know, we had an appraisal, I think it was 2 years ago, and I think my district went up almost 20%. I think we averaged around 20 to 30% increase in property values. So if you have a tax increase, that's a big hit to people. And of course, you can say, well, your house is worth more. Okay, let's talk about that. Yes, my house is worth more. I can sell more. But if I sell my house and then I got to turn around and buy a house, am I really making any money? Because the house that I'm wanting to buy is same amount, you know, unless I downgrade, that's going to be an expensive house.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, interest rates today are higher than when they last purchased a home, or maybe when they refinanced last, whatever the case is. But the rates are higher today, so it's going to make that same house that's more expensive today even more expensive. Yep. When you factor that in,
they've been up, I think, in 2017, my house, I had like 2.9 interest rate. Now it's up to 7.
Yeah,
you know, in some places 8 based on your credit score. But yeah, I mean, food costs more, gas. I mean, there's so much extra costs. And, you know, when you have certain people that are able to afford that, well, there's a lot of people that are living paycheck to paycheck. And some people work two jobs. And, you know, when bread and milk and that goes up that much, I mean, it's a big time burden on them. And we have to think about that.
Where does our county stand today on the Ethics Committee and the review of the property assessor's office here
in
Rutherford County?
I'm on the ethics committee, and we had our hearing. We heard from the employees that came forward. We heard from Rob Mitchell, and it was the recommendation of the ethics committee to turn this over to the DA and the comptroller. And that's where we're at right now, you know, and Rob is cooperating. He's doing everything he can. And hey, we got to understand that everybody's innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah.
You know, and then in this local government politics, it's always jump to conclusions because it is human nature for us to build somebody up And it is human nature for us to tear them down. And tearing them down is a whole lot juicier of a story than doing the other.
We've heard so many different situations or stories revolving around the property assessor's office. Everything from they wrongfully increased what somebody has as square footage of their home, thus leading them to have to pay more in property taxes. In fact, the county mayor said his home was one of those homes where they suddenly added 1,000 square feet or so to it.
Yeah.
But in those situations, all you can do is just research, investigate, and try to learn more and figure out what happened. Was it a mistake? What did occur?
Well, I believe the DA referred it over to the comptroller. So that's what the comptroller's job is. And they're, you know, investigating right now. They do not comment on investigations, so we really don't know what's going on. But I know that is an active inquiry. And what happens, I mean, we'll address that once it, you know, the report comes in, and then we'll go from there. You know, like I said, innocent until proven guilty, Scott. And these accusations, you know, unless we have, you know this, and I'm not privileged to that information, it's hard for me to comment on it and say anything.
The whole commission, they're in the same boat for the most part. I mean, they've got the same information that the general public saw. I mean, there's not much to it yet.
Absolutely. And we'll know more once that comptroller, you know, investigation comes out. And then we could be able to answer these questions to you.
Again, with us today, Rutherford County Commissioner Craig Harris. Back to that forensic center. If that were to move forward, you probably don't, you're not thinking it's going to move forward this year, next year. It's in the making for the most part, but it got turned down by the county commission during the, what, last year, or was it earlier this year?
Yeah, well, we approved to have the engineering and architect designs, but we have not approved building this. It is not being built. Like I said, Pettis Reed is one of my closest friends and allies, and he's for that. And I think Pettis is also being chairman of public safety. Pettis Reed is very strong with the sheriff's department and first responders. And I think that when he sees that we could use and allocate that money towards helping our salaries, I think Pettis would understand. But Pettis is going to keep fighting for it, and I'm going to support Pettis. I just don't see the need to do it now.
In other words, we've got a forensic center within a 30-minute drive. We can utilize that. And more importantly, the first responders need a pay raise as opposed to us seeing a forensic center come to life.
Yeah, and I believe so. And you know, we raised taxes in 2 years ago, and it was a substantial raise. And, you know, I was part of that, and, you know, and because I was trying to protect our deficit, and I was always trying to protect our AAA rating, but I did not support building a transfer station or building a forensic center. You know, I feel that we have to take that money that we raised and we have to address problems that we're facing now. For instance, you know, we have horrible traffic. We need to invest in our roads. We need to invest in our employees. These things that we need to do, and that's where my focus is.
Again, County Commissioner Craig Harris, we're going to take a short break and then we'll come right back. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about different issues impacting Rutherford County, one of those being the opioid epidemic. And we'll find out if any change has been made there, and we'll learn more about that and several other items as well, including landfill, the future of the landfill. Stay with us. We do have more news and information coming up.
Broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios, MTE has provided light, comfort, and connection to our community since 1936. As your trusted energy advisor, MTE is always here to help. Connect online or download the My MTE app.
Hey folks, it's Mike Sparks, 49th District House member. Running for re-election, would ask for your support.
The issues Mike's championed include the First and Second Amendment tax cut bills, passing legislation to improve mental health, the Safe Storage of Firearms Act, plus he sponsored affordable housing legislation that passed this year. Mike Sparks has been outspoken on Jefferson Pike for 20 years, which led to the $70 million widening project that's almost complete. We need Mike Sparks to remain in the state house.
This Mike Sparks asking for your vote.
Playful messages like Mike Sparks, Alicia Sparks Treasure.
Welcome Welcome to Danny Brewer's Friday Pony Picks, sponsored by the Mint Gaming Hall at Kentucky Downs. The live racing meet for 2024 is now in the books, and the thoroughbred racing game is building towards the Breeders' Cup. The Cup will be contested at Del Mar on November 1st and 2nd this year. The place to play these world championships is Kentucky Downs. Featuring over 1,000 gaming machines, fine dining, live entertainment, and Breeders' Cup wagering, this entertainment destination is just 30 minutes north of Nashville. For more information, visit themintgaming.com.
Danny Brewer here. Saturday, October 26th means we got 1 week to the Breeders' Cup, so let's get going across the country. First stop, Belmont at the Big A Meet. Race 8, the Grade 3, 49er, 3-year-olds and up, going 1 mile on the dirt. The number 8 Film Star is our top pick, trained by Linda Rice, ridden by Red Ortiz Jr. Race 10 is the Grade 2 Mother Goose Stakes. 3-year-old filly's going 1 mile 8 on the dirt. 8-horse field, the number 3, Tarifa, is our top pick. Daughter Bernardini is trained by Brad Cox, ridden by Flavienne Pratt. Let's head to Keeneland next. It's closing day there. Race 6, the Bowman Mill Stakes. 7 2-year-old males going 6 furlongs on the dirt. The number 2, Terrapin Station, trained by Dale Romans. He's unbeaten in 1 start. Race 8, the Grade 2 Haggard Fayette. 1 mile 8 on dirt for 3-year-olds and up. The number 8, Hit Show, is our top pick, trained by Brad Cox. A little superfect action here. We'll put him with the number 6, Redland Roll, for Kenny McPeak. The number 1, Trademark, trained by Vicky Oliver. And the number 3, Uno Mas Bourbon, trained by Ian Wilkes. Race 9, the Grade 3 Bryan Station, 1 mile on turf for 3-year-olds. The number 4, My Boy Prince, is our top pick, trained by Mark Cassie, ridden by Jose Ortiz. Santa Anita is where we'll finish. The race 7 is the Grade 2 Twilight Derby, 1 mile 8 on turf for 3-year-old males. The number 4, Stay Hot, is our top pick. He's won 3 of 5 races in 2024. He's been in the money 7 of 10 lifetime starts for trainer Peter Erton. Got a hunch, bet a bunch, back a horse and get paid.
If you're planning an upcoming trip and want to include your pet, we have all the travel supplies you'll need at Animal City. This is Amanda at Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. Animal City is Murfreesboro's hometown family-owned pet store. We've had the honor and pleasure of serving the community for 33 years. If you want to see some photos of our adorable pets, feel free to check out our Facebook page, Animal City of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street, right here in Murfreesboro.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
We're broadcasting out of the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios. Middle Tennessee Electric has been serving to make life better since 1936. In studio with us this morning, we have Rutherford County Commissioner Craig Harris. And before we go on with jumping to different topics or anything here, here's a text message we got talking about salaries overall within Rutherford County government, not just emergency responders, but talking about how it says they all need cost of living increases, pay raises, and there's a lot of employees out there in the county. How many employees does the county have as a whole?
Not counting the schools, around 1,500.
So if you include the schools, that's a lot.
Absolutely. And I think we gave a 5% raise this year. And then during budget, I proposed and we got, through some cuts, an extra 1% for them. So I understand their frustration. And, you know, we're trying to address every problem. And, you know, our county employees are just absolutely very good workers, very strong and hard workers. And he's absolutely correct. We need to take care of everybody, but we're trying to look at needs. You know, in government, there's needs in all areas. We gave them a 5% raise and you know, another 1%. We're trying to stay above CPI.
When a pay raise is approved, does that also funnel down to the county schools, or do they handle their entire department totally separate?
Oh, it's totally separate. No. The only thing we can do, we have no control over the budget of a school except paying for it. And we have what's called a maintenance of effort, which means that we cannot cut their budget from the previous year. We can keep it the same, but we can't go in and cut their budget. But the school, you know, Dr. Sullivan, they work well with us. We don't have like a major conflict. I mean, they try to be as neutral, you know, in raising their budget. I think they work hard trying to have a balance.
Before we go on to the opioid epidemic, I want to bring up the county landfill. We don't need to spend a lot of time on it because I feel like it's talked about a lot. One of the heaviest topics almost. But with the landfill, what's the future going to look like there?
Well, one of the things that I was kind of upset about is there are some people in our government said it's closing in 2 years. Well, that's 2 years ago. We're still seeing another 4 years, you know, and they're saying 2028. The way I felt about the transfer station is that is definitely something that we needed. I didn't think we needed it right after tax increase because we get free trash for another 4 years. So we built a $20 million transfer station. And here's the thing that I had on it, Scott. The city of Murfreesboro, they're building a transfer station. Now, what I proposed, and with Craig Tindall and Shane McFarland, is we build one together. It's $20 million. We give 10 instead of 20. And then they come back and, you know, they said, hey, we won't charge you a dime. But the next one you build and you don't charge us a dime. And I proposed that, but it got voted down, and a lot of commissioners want their own, and I understand that. And it's a done deal. It's going forward. And, you know, of course, the county has made a deal with waste management, and that was a contract that I was against. And it passed through purchasing and never came to the full commission. That's one of the things, you know, it's kind of like waste management is going to be using our transfer station more than we will.
And that contract basically, I guess, outlines the opportunity for waste management to come to the transfer station, pick up our trash, and then transfer it, drive it elsewhere to be dumped.
Yeah, and their price that they gave us is good. Waste Management is a very good company, very reputable. The thing that I was against is some of the minimums that they would charge us that we had to have. And where the county commission and the budget and the public works disagreed on is Mayor Carr is banking everything on all these private haulers coming in here and using us. And right now, we can't compete with Republic's price. So, again, it's that situation where, okay, you want to come here. There is a convenience of time, and he's absolutely correct on that, how much you want to spend for that time. But his target at the beginning of this was $150 a ton. Now I think he's down to $90 to $85, and they're paying around $70. So that's a lot of money. These guys don't make a lot of money. So I was against this contract, and you know, it didn't ever get to the county commission based on our private act. The purchasing department had final say on this, and they approved it. Now we go forward.
I want to go back to housing just for a second, because I think housing and the landfill waste, those all go hand in hand in a lot of ways. I know the city mayor, Shane McFarland, was on the air a couple of weeks back, and he was talking about how some developers, they're inching outwards away from the city of Murfreesboro, but yet on that city line, but in the county, and they're starting to build larger neighborhoods, developments out in every direction around the city limits in order to avoid different fees, different zoning, different codes that are part of the city. And instead, they're deciding to work in the county and with the county instead. Is this going to cause any problems for the county as far as making sure that these new neighborhoods have the right police and fire protection, they have the right trash pickup, they have all those needed necessities?
I know yesterday that the Planning Commission has a plan that's coming out. I think they met yesterday on a finalizing the draft. Pettus Reed and Jeff Phillips and all of the Planning Commission, Rhonda Allen, I'll give her a shout out. They are addressing these problems now. The thing about city is they have sewer. For us, you know, to get really good neighborhoods, they got to have sewer. And the only way that they can get sewer is they annex the property. So we're in a situation where some of our lands rock, and we have to be very creative in our solid waste and sewer. And I think that Planning Commission is dealing with that right now. I mean, you know, I've always believed that the builders should not be the full burden of our debt. And a lot of people, you know, say that, and that can be argued, but I don't think that they are the full burden of our debt. I really believe that. But I you know, they are trying hard to do things, you know, building right-of-ways, and they're trying to help as much as they can. But yeah, we are we're growing, and I feel like the Planning Commission is addressing that.
In these new neighborhoods, they have a step septic system, which is basically like a giant septic tank for the whole neighborhood to share, in a sense. I mean, yeah. I know they all have their individual tanks, but in a sense, that's what we're looking at because we don't have the sewer.
Yeah, and then, you know, you got to bury that thing. And then you got a bunch of rock. You can't put a septic, you know. And so there's creative ways that the Planning Commission is looking at so that we'd be able to do some of these things, but we had to be on the right ground. And, you know, trust, these builders are going to, they're not going to buy something that's going to be unbuildable. And some might, you know, I mean, some might, but I think the Planning Commission is doing a good job, and I think they're dealing with that.
Are we still seeing a problem throughout our county, and I'm sure other areas are seeing it too, if we are, hedge fund companies coming in, buying 10, 20, 30 homes in one neighborhood or on one street, and then turning around using those as rental property?
Yeah, that's a big problem, actually. And I'll tell you where the problem is. Rental properties don't necessarily adhere to HOAs. So some of the calls that I get, we're talking about calls, some of the current, and I'm going to work with our delegation to address this problem, is that when people want to change their HOA policies, they can't do it because they got to have a quorum. So instead of, like, you got 30 houses at a rental, well, that builder or that investment firm's got 30 votes. You can't get a quorum. So what I'm trying to do is say, hey, you got 40 houses, you got one vote. You know, that way the HOAs can probably change up their guidelines and try to address some of the problems that they have as far as, you know, cutting the grass or putting kennels in the front yard or any type that, that damages the value of their home.
Now, with an apartment complex, there's always that argument that renters don't pay the same in property taxes, so therefore the schools don't benefit as much. But when you look at an individual house that, let's say, a hedge fund company buys, that company has to turn around and pay those property taxes. So in those cases, it looks like they're getting the same in property taxes, the county is, by doing it that way, an individual home versus an apartment complex.
Yeah, and you know, we just raised with this school facilities tax, we're going to have $1.50 on commercial. So that's going to be a big increase as far as our taxes and collections. Now, anytime they pay property tax on apartments, now that is passed on to the renter. They are paying. It's through the rent, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they pass it on. It's not like they, you know.
Builder, I know they still pay.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm curious, is that property tax, is it less when you look at the per unit price? If you were to divide it all up, is it a lower property tax than what a single family home is going to pay on a piece of property in a neighborhood?
No, because we charge 40% on commercials, not a dollar a foot. So it's 40% on, that's going up to $1.50 a square foot. That's going to bring in additional $4 million. And the $1.50 that I was, when I pushed for this, not a lot of people, you know, was with me on this. And
you're talking about new construction now,
yes,
right?
Yes, new construction, but also, you know, $1.50 on new construction on commercial, which that's a big increase.
So in other words,
we never had that before.
Is that in place now?
Yes.
So when a contractor comes in, a developer comes in, they say, I'm going to build a 100-unit apartment complex. They got to pay $1.50 per square foot in tax up front, and that's the school facilities tax.
Up to 150,000 square feet.
Okay.
So, yeah, you there is a cap on that. And, you know, this law, it's got some good points. It's got some bad points. But, I mean, we worked with the builders and they came up and tried to do something. Yes, I mean, I wanted to see a larger amount on square footage price. Mm-hmm. But we worked together. You know, our delegation worked hard on this. I'm proud of our delegation. They did everything they could to help this county. That's just one bucket. Scott, everybody thinks, okay, they got to do all the burden of the debt. No, we got to do other things. And that's what I'm going to do my third year term, is I'm going to find every way I can to raise revenue. We're looking at a mineral severance tax. We're looking at interest-free loans through the Tennessee Lottery school lottery funds. We're looking at,
what would those loans be for?
Build schools.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it was 6 months ago, and I might be wrong, the schools asked for $750 million over 5 years. I mean, Scott, that's $750 million. Yeah. And that's why it was so important to keep our AAA rating, because that AAA rating on borrowing money could save us up to 2 to 3 points, which is millions of dollars. And when we had to build these schools and do a bond.
I hate that we have to borrow money. I mean, that cost us even more money.
Debt services, you know, probably they asked me for a price a year ago, 2 years ago. What do you need? What do you need? What do you need? And I told the delegation and I told everyone, we need around $30 million a year. That's where we're at on that.
As we close out this morning, we only have about 4 minutes left, but as we close out this morning, another issue that you've really been passionate about, the opioid epidemic. Where do we stand today, and are we still seeing an increase in overdose deaths because of opioids?
No, we're not, and we're actually starting to have a little motivation in making a difference. And you know, one of the things, in 2021, we had over 133 deaths, and then last year we had 101. That's a 16% decrease. And this month, we had 5 overdose deaths and we had 3 suicides. So those numbers are usually in the double figures. So we're seeing a decrease in that. Now, when we got the pharmaceutical money, you know, we got close to $4 million.
Do we get that every year? Because
we get $500,000 every year, and we do get another substantial amount of money coming in. So it depends, though. It varies. And we've given out, Scott, over $1 million. And we have brought the coalition together. My vision and my dream was that we, as Rutherford County, sound the alarm and come together. And these organizations are coming together. Now, The things that I've always concentrated on was awareness, education, and recovery. Big on education. A lot of people don't know that 90% of people addicted to drugs smoked or drank at age 12 to 13.
Wow.
So I went after that. Now, in 2021, I got with the superintendent, and we decided we're going to do a pilot program of 3 schools. So in 2022, we had 3 schools, Scott. In 2023, that went up to 12 schools. In 2024, we revamped our education and started a program called HOPE, and it's in our curriculum. And this summer, we trained 80 teachers to teach this subject. And here's what we had in 2024. We brought this to 260 fifth graders, 130 middle school, and 1,033 high schoolers. Now, for 24 and 25, that number goes to 3,250 fifth graders, 13,700 middle school, 18,900 high school. We are going to have this program reach 35,380 students.
And this is a program that teaches the dangers of opioids, and kids need to avoid it, and I guess teaches them how to say no to that in a way.
Well, it teaches them, you know, the effects of it. It shows them the effects of it. It's not just opioids. It's also drug and alcohol and other drugs. But, Scott, think about it. We had nobody in 2022 listening to this or seeing this. You know, we had DARE programs and stuff like that as an elective. This is in the curriculum, and you take it. And for us and the school board and the school superintendent to reach 35,000 students, it's, you know, it's just unheard of. And I am more proud of that than I can tell you anything. I'm proud of the death rates that are dropping. I'm proud of the Rutherford Opioid Board that we have. It's our team is focused and determined to help this county. And that's what I'm proud of. And, you know, people get mad. You know, Scott, I was homeless when I was 16. And if it wasn't for people helping me, I wouldn't be here. I feel like I'm a miracle. And I'm going to go out and help people. And I'm going, you know, because we need help. I always had that attitude and that ego. Hey, I can handle any problem by myself, Scott. I can face it. I can face adversity and I will solve it. Well, Scott, when it comes to this, I failed miserably. It's addiction is a horrible, horrible thing. And people don't understand how devastating it is. You know, the thing about addiction that always kills me is something nobody thinks about. It gives you a little hope. You know, it just gives you to think that you can beat it. And then just like that, it takes it away. It's cruel.
And we're already out of time.
Okay.
Commissioner Craig Harris with us this morning. If anybody would like to contact you, reach out to you, should they, I don't know, send you an email? Is that the best way?
Yeah. And email me at ccotinc@comcast.net.
Well, thank you for joining us.
I appreciate it, Scott. It's always an honor to be up here.
Coming up next, a look at local news and CBS Radio News, right here on WGNS, your good neighbor station.